Welcome to Good Times, a Locked On Heat interview show featuring conversations with guests in South Florida sports, media, and entertainment. I'm Wes Goldberg, kicking off a series of conversations with the other South Florida Locked On hosts. And today, we'll talk to Peter Pratt of Locked On Marlins and Armando Velez of Locked On Florida Panthers. Gonna be honest, not a ton of Miami Heat talk here, but this is a good way to get the top line stories of the other teams here and get introduced to those other podcasts and the work that they do. So we'll start with Peter and then talk to Armando. Enjoy. Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, I'm here with Peter Pratt, the host of Locked On Marlins. Peter, thanks so much for jumping on. Let's just get right into the Marlins stuff because it's not been a great year by many standards. But for the Marlins, things aren't always at the highest standards, if we're being honest. But just going to get right to it. Has this season been a disappointment to you?
Oh, boy. Straight into it, eh? No doubt. I guess, you know, as you mentioned, from a Marlins perspective, you know, you've got to temper expectations in general. Like, you just got to look at payrolls across Major League Baseball and, you know, where the Marlins sit. They're, you know, bottom third. And so, was it a disappointment? Listen, the Marlins offseason, they made some moves, a lot of trades, yeah. Added a few, offseason acquisitions, some free agents. So, they spent some money. So, I would say the hope was there. It was burning brightly. And actually, they stayed in contention probably longer than they have done in a 162 season for a long time. You know, they were right in the hunt, kind of approaching the deadline. Yeah. Then things went a bit sideways and they just really haven't recovered since. So they kept people interested longer than they have done for a long time. But yeah, fundamentally, as we sit here now at the end of August, the season's cooked. It's been long cooked and it's back to the cycle, the Marlins cycle of, hey, let the kids play, see what we got and see what next year brings. So yeah, disappointment, I think, is a fair assessment.
A little bit more than 50 games left in the year, right? Just not even close to the wild card. And like you mentioned, like right going into the deadline, probably a couple of weeks going into it, to me, that was the crossroads moment for the Marlins season. It was, hey, if you get on a run here, maybe you can get up to 500. You're in the mix for the wild card. And then instead of doing that, they basically did the opposite of a run and just lost a bunch of games in a row. And just really sort of cratered the season. There were some injuries and things that they were dealing with, of course, but it also speaks to the lack of depth that this team has too. And so for me, I think I was a little disappointed. I don't know if I expected them to make the wild card, but I expected them to make it a little bit more interesting, at least past the deadline. And then when it was clear that they could have used some reinforcements at the deadline and them to just like not really make any of those kinds of deals, it kind of leads me to my next question I had for you. Juan Soto. Greg Cody from the Miami Herald actually wrote, I thought, a very interesting column during the deadline when all the Soto stuff was going on saying, why wouldn't the Marlins trade for Soto? It doesn't really seem like the move that they would it's not the move that they would ever make, but why not? Just basically asking the question, why not? They have all the prospects. They got this great farm system. Like, why not? What was your opinion about the Juan Soto stuff? Did you want them to kind of make that move?
There's a bit of a history here, Wes. It's a funny one because in the offseason, I was already blowing up about the Marlins should make a move for Soto. And at that point, it was like, hey, the Nats are never trading Soto. Not a chance in hell the Nats are trading Soto. Fast forward to the deadline, Soto's gone. So in one sense, you know, I was on it there, which was great. And it made sense. Like for the Nats, their window now, they're not contending for many years. Like they're in a real difficult spot. So from a Marlins perspective, how can you go out there? Who has the ammo to go and get someone like Soto, prospect-wise? And to your point, the Marlins do. Made a ton of sense. You go and get a generational talent, trade away some prospects. We know the checkered history for the Marlins and their prospects. Like, if they're a hitting prospect, it's unlikely they're going to actually develop into an above-average major league player. So trade away from the depth, go and get Soto. I'm a realist, though, now. Actually, no, I'm not a realist. I'm an optimist in the most times. However, with Juan Soto, the situation there for the Marlins is we could have got a deal done. And then you've got 2.5 years of control of Soto. It's expensive control because his arbitration number is real high anyway. But he's then looking for a $500 million contract for the next 15 years, whatever it might be. And that's the problem for the Marlins. Like they're never going to hand out a contract like that. They're never going to spend the money. And so if they were happy sending the prospects, you know, unloading the farm for 2.5 years of Soto, if they thought that could push them over the edge and over the top, I was for it. But I think the Padres will look at this as a long-term investment. The way they're, you know, the ballpark's packed out there, the revenue's coming in. I mean, I spoke about it on Locked On Marlins last week that, you know, we look over San Diego Padres. What are they doing? This is the Miami Marlins. This is Miami. What is going on? How is San Diego doing this and Miami can't? I mean, it's a fundamental, you know, they're similar size markets. Miami's a bigger market than San Diego. And for some reason, these guys are making the moves and the Marlins unwilling to spend and, you know, unwilling to trade for generational talents. Yeah, for me, that's a bad indicator of where this club's at right now.
Yeah, both San Diego and Miami sort of fair weather type of cities, right? And what I mean by that is it's great weather and there's always all this stuff to do. You've got to have a reason to convince people to come to the ballpark. And in San Diego, they found that reason, right? You've got Tatis, you've got now Soto there. They've invested into that. And there's other things that they did too. And ESPN wrote this great story. Did you see it? Where they sort of laid that case out. But basically saying how Miami is starting to do some of the things in the community that can get young fans involved and interested in baseball. And hopefully that starts to pay dividends down the road. But that's all well and good, right? But at some point, you got to make a splash and you got to invest in winning. And I think back to when the ballpark was first built in Hialeah and how they invested in all these good players. Mm. And then within a year, all those players were basically traded away. But that was the way to get people into the ballpark. It was new ballpark, novelty of that, plus, hey, maybe you're actually going to put a good team on, like you're going to invest, you're going to try to do these things. And then obviously that's not what happened. So there's a lot of things that can involve, but you mentioned that you were an optimist before. What's something that was surprisingly positive about this season for the Marlins?
Oh boy. I mean, it's, it's been underwhelming most of, from an offensive perspective, it's been historically bad. I mean, there's been so many runs of, you know, shutout innings in a row, games where you can't score more than 3 or 4 runs in a row. Like it's been bad, no doubt. However, Jazz Chisholm is the shining light in you know, the Marlins, in Major League Baseball too. I absolutely love Jazz, what he does on the field, off the field, and his progression. He's hurt again. That's a problem again from a wider perspective. So Jazz Chisholm has gone up another level. Equally, Sandy Alcantara remains in the Cy Young race, and I think he's, you know, he's got a few starts left, but I think there's a real strong chance that Sandy Alcantara becomes the first ever Cy Young winner for the Miami Marlins or Florida Marlins. So, you know, there's been, you've got the stars that are ascending, which is great. And we can kind of wrap around that. And I think that's generally how we're seeing the club now. Everyone's kind of looking at going, okay, you've got Sandy and Jazz, but what else have you got? Like, there's a lot of decisions to be made here around the Marlins in the offseason, but those two dudes ascending as they have, I think has been the key storylines. There's been one or two other ones, but I mean, those two, they are legitimate Major League Baseball stars right now. And they're under control for many years. So the Marlins, we should build around them. However, we're approaching the end of a 5-year cycle here. And I'm very intrigued to see what they do. Like, are they going to go for another rebuild and Sandy and Jazz end up being part of that? And that would be disastrous for us as fans, but you know, it's decisions need to be made, I guess.
You mentioned the offseason there, but quick, just correction. I mentioned that the ballpark was in Hialeah for some reason. It's in La Havana. For before people in Miami just go crazy on me, I recognize I made two H's. I made the mistake, slip in the brain. But offseason, talk to me about it. You mentioned it a bit there. What do you expect?
Yeah, I expect activity. That's going to be the word. I think the Marlins need to be active. They weren't active at the deadline, which I think was a surprise. And they've got an ability for developing pitchers within the Miami Marlins organization. So with that and that conveyor belt, they absolutely need to leverage that and find ways to upgrade the offense via trade. They've gone down the free agent route last offseason for a couple of hitters. It hasn't really worked out, but the way those contracts sit, we're going to have to ride them out for a while. So if they're looking for upgrades, it's going to have to be some big name arms leaving the organization for some big name bats. So it's going to be busy. It should be busy. You know, the bullpen will need reinforcing, but they've got so many starters there. Yeah. They have to move some for some bats. It's got to be activity. It's got to be bravery. And the Marlins just need to make the right moves. What I would say, free agents aside, they've had some stinkers with the free agents, but Kim Ang, I would say she's got a real nice eye for trades. I would, you know, all the trades she makes for me feel like wins. And so I trust Kim from a trading perspective to get a great deal for the Marlins. No doubt, like her, the way she identifies talent and the returns have all been really impressive, in my opinion. Free agency, less so. But that's what we need. We need Kim to absolutely deliver with some trades in this offseason and just re-energize this offense.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but in the draft a few months ago, they drafted mostly pitching, right? And
it's funny, right? They took the first round pick, they took a hitter. So they took Jacob Berry, and then they went 9-10 arms in a row. So they went heavy pitching. So you're right, overall, it was heavy on pitching. And most people looked at that to say, that's what the Marlins do best. We've struggled to identify and develop hitting. Let's get in some arms. We know we can turn them into studs. And then you flip them for some hitting later down the line in a few years' time. So I'm not against that method. It's high risk.
If you're really good identifying good pitchers and you're not at good hitters, then it makes sense. Like, you know, and maybe you trade some of the pitchers that have actually gotten a little bit more time and are a little bit more developed and not the prospects. But then that's why you drafted 9-10 straight pitching prospects in a row. Is now you can backfill those guys that maybe you're sending out for real batters. I think it's a sound strategy. It's a rare moment of, if this is the strategy, like of self-awareness that doesn't always exist in sports. And I think it would be an interesting way to play that. Who are the most important players or prospects going forward for Heat fans to keep an eye on?
From the major league guys that are there right now, I've already mentioned the two cornerstones, and it's Jazz Chisholm and Sandy Alcantara, obviously. But, you know, from if you think of who else is most important to this team right now, it's really, can those younger pitchers, can they develop? Can they take the next step that allows the Marlins to move some of the proven major league pitching? And what I mean by that is, do they feel confident enough to move a Pablo Lopez that's an above average starting pitcher that can get you the type of return that you need? And do you have the confidence of like an Edward Cabrera to step up into that role, Jesus Lizardo to step up into that role and solidify the rotation? The rotation has been nice all year long for those guys, the legitimate starters. They've performed. There's another wave coming. The Marlins' top prospect right now, surprise, surprise, it's a pitcher, Eury Pérez. And he's young, but he's already at double A. And he's going to be knocking down the door next year to come and, you know, make his major league debut. So for me, I'm all in on Edward Cabrera. He's the guy that I've been watching. He's very much, I would say, to the mold of Sandy Alcantara. So if the Marlins can get him to develop to that point, Edward Cabrera, then Jesus Lizardo, the lefty, you know, that 1-2-3 punch there looks nice. And you've moved Pablo Lopez and got a nice bat. You know, those are the guys you need to see. Offensively, it's pretty much a lottery. You look around, it's the old core that has been around for years. Miguel Rojas, Brian Anderson, Garrett Cooper, Joey Wendell was acquired, but you know, they're all over 30, these dudes. Jesus Aguilar, everyone over 30, 1 year of control. It feels old and it feels slow and it feels a bit, it needs re-energizing. So I think they need to move on from a few of those guys. Get younger, get quicker, get, you know, just add a bit more juice into the lineup, I think. So with that being said, who's that going to be? And right now, we don't know who that is. And that's the point, is you have to move some pitching, get some young studs in the mix that can, you know, can pair up with Jazz. We know Jazz will be in there, but who do you couple with Jazz to give this team a chance of winning next year?
So those of you, for those people who have not heard you on Locked On Marlins, and obviously if you want to subscribe to Locked On Marlins, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, it's on YouTube, wherever you got to go to get your podcast, might be surprised to hear your voice and wondering, okay, why is this guy from Leeds talking about the Marlins? Can you just sort of take me into your backstory? Like, how did you end up being a Marlins fan?
I know. Crazy, right? How did I choose the Marlins? Why did I choose the Marlins?
Why did you do this to yourself? I was born in South Florida. I have to root for this team. You didn't have to do this.
I know I didn't. I didn't, but it was back in 2016. This is quite a familiar story, I'd say. You know, a family trip over to Florida, into Miami. So I was over there with my wife, her family, and I said, hey, listen, I want to go and watch the Miami Marlins. I'd started following baseball kind of loosely. I didn't have a team at that point. I'd been to the Cardinals, to Busch, the year before. So I'd actually been to a game before. And that kind of piqued my interest. We went to the Marlins game. I said, oh, listen, we're going to go. And I think we were in West Palm at this point. So we got the train down and got an Uber, and it was raining. It was terrible weather. No one was in the ballpark. And I was
You're already a baseball fan at this point, and you're just sort of just kicking around baseball parks, just sort of hanging out.
I wasn't really a fan, I would say. Okay. Like, for example, I turned up, Jose Fernandez was pitching. I didn't know who he was. I'd never heard of Jose Fernandez.
Gotcha.
It was that kind of phase. But I knew generally the rules of the game loosely.
Right. Yeah.
Turned up to this game. It was against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Roof closed, rain happening. And Stanton hit a huge home run, I think, in the third inning. And I went, that's the moment. That's it. I'm in on the Marlins at this moment. I went straight to the team store, bought a jersey, a Stanton jersey. And that was it. Decided I'm following the Marlins here and now. If only the Diamondbacks would have hit a home run first, I mean, they would have saved me.
that is so funny. So you get in on 2016 on Stanton within what, a year, 2 years? He's traded to the Yankees.
Yeah.
By the way, hey, Stanton's my guy more than the Marlins. He hit the home run. Maybe I'll just go be a Yankee fan. But no, you didn't do that for whatever reason. And then so you didn't even get in on the 2003 World Series team.
No.
You didn't get to enjoy that. Obviously not the 97 one. For me, I remember the 97 Marlins World Series team. The 2003 one was more my kind of team with Cabrera, Dontrelle Willis, Luis Castillo, like that entire group. Love that team. That was my team. And that's why I'm still a Marlins fan. You're just like, okay, well, we did it twice. We really can't do it again. Like, come on, let's make this happen. But, I wanted to know how that ended up. A lot of Marlins fans in Leeds.
I've not met any other Marlins fans in Leeds. There is a small
That's
cluster.
Not surprising.
It's pretty sure there are some baseball fans in Leeds, and I think this is the funny thing. Like in the UK now, there is like a real niche in US language. There's a real niche of fans that are real hardcore, like me, that will watch every game every day, and we're all in. But it is so small. It's such a small following in the UK. Like, you know, barely anyone follows the sport. And so it's just down to the fact that there's not that opportunity to watch the games. You have to have MLB.tv to watch games. It's not on, you can't just fall into it anymore. They did the same. The interesting bit, obviously, they're pressing the London series now. They're pressing ahead. We've got the London series next year. The Cubs Cardinals are coming across. They've got another two after that. You know, so they're going to be really pressing the agenda here in the UK and Europe. So I'm really intrigued to see the way the game develops and how they try to globalize and capitalize on this, much like they've done with the NFL, which has been really successful over in the UK. And to the, you know, some extent as well, the NBA as well have continued with London games. So, you know, it's funny. I got to that point with the Marlins where I was following them. Then my son was born and I said to my wife, listen, here's the deal. I'll do... and for those who listen and have got kids, they know around 2, 3 a.m., it's the night feed of doom. I said, listen, I'll do those. I'll do the 2, 3 a.m.ers. So I basically watched the whole season pretty much live in that 2017 year, watching the games. And, you know, because I was up, because my son, you know, was up having feeds, and I was like, great, I'm all in. And that really, that really turned it up for me, where I was fully in on the Marlins then, watching them like live every day in the UK, which is wild and tiring as well, I must say.
Well, it's a great story. I really appreciate you coming on the show. Peter Pratt, host of Locked On Marlins. Again, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You do an awesome job covering the team. It's probably one of the more unique shows, I think, on the Locked On Podcast Network, given your relationship with the Marlins. But that said, it's great, and I really appreciate the work that you do. Thanks for coming on the show, man.
Appreciate you, Wes. No problem.
Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all of your betting needs. Find your favorite sports and events at the number one online source for odds, lines, and games. Find reviews and news of every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all of your sports wagering information. From live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts, they have you covered. So head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to learn more about the action happening today. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, here now with Armando Velez, the host of Locked On Florida Panthers. Let's just jump right into this because the Panthers make this huge move, trading their star player for another star player. They go ahead and get Matthew Tkachuk. Just for the people who don't know, how big of a deal was this trade?
It's a big deal because you in the NHL you never really see superstar traded for superstar in the same blockbuster trade too often. Usually it's one leaving in free agency and another just getting traded, and then a load of draft picks, especially in the NHL, unlike the NBA. This will be a surprise for people who don't watch hockey on the Locked On Heat feed. The salary cap in the NHL is $82.5 million for each team of the 32 teams. So, you know, it's a lot to squeeze in, especially with the NHL being in a flat cap world currently. The salary cap is not expected to rise for another two seasons, according to Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly. But yeah, really the situation for the Panthers came down to two expiring contracts on the team, a lot of dead cap on their roster of $6.4 million next season, this upcoming season, needing to maintain a little bit of roster flexibility for years to come. So with Jonathan Huberdeau being 29 years old, and you know, most deals, especially when you sign with your team that you are currently on, most of those long-term deals are eight-year contracts, and if you sign with another team, it's 7 years. So with that, they saw an opportunity to get a younger version of that, and Matthew Tkachuk being 24 years old versus Jonathan Huberdeau, who has been a big face of this franchise since he got drafted in 2011. You know, with the Panthers just not being able to get over the top, something had to give. So this trade for Matthew Tkachuk, instead of it being a 2 to 3 year window, even though they're going to take a slight step back next season, this creates opportunity to be consistently in the dance for 6, possibly 7 years.
That's interesting, because that sort of signals what it is that this Panthers organization is trying to accomplish, is just, I guess, keeping that window open, but moreover, just making sure that they're always competitive. Right. And based on sort of where the Panthers were last year and the excitement around that program, it would make sense why they would want to do that, right? Hey, we're winning. We won a bunch of games. We won, 58 games? Had the best record in the NHL. Suddenly, we're selling out a bunch of games. There's an energy around the program that wasn't there before. And so is that, in your mind, maybe part of the motivation is just trying to avoid any kind of, you know, plummet in the standings, any need to sort of rebuild anytime soon, more just sort of holding on to that energy? Is that part of this?
Well, with how contract terms go in the NHL, mostly, when there's longer terms, it's harder to trade those. Right now, we're kind of seeing it with a few teams in the NHL right now. Right now, we're seeing it with the Washington Capitals, who are now an older squad who has won a Stanley Cup. Pittsburgh is kind of on that right now, even though they've won as well. But with long commitments to Jonathan Huberdeau and possibly Mackenzie Weegar, those, if the Panthers would have fallen short in these 2 to 3 years, not only would those contracts would have been harder to trade, but there could have been an opportunity for the Panthers to be in that mediocre level in the NHL. And right now, right before they went full rebuild, the San Jose Sharks, when they made the Stanley Cup final in 2016, they were making the playoffs and over and over again. They just never got the cup. But now a few years after, that San Jose Sharks team hit their ceiling, but they were starting to like not get the playoff success, and now they had to go into the rebuild, which is now right where they're in. And the GM of the San Jose Sharks is the brother of Dolphins GM Chris Greer. So Mike Greer is now taking in a full rebuild after Chris Greer with the Dolphins went through his kind of rebuild.
That's interesting. Tell me about Paul Maurice, the coach, the new head coach there. Kind of bounced around over the course of his career. Hiring him was met with some, I guess, question marks a little bit. Tell me about him and what your thoughts are on him.
Well, it was actually a day or two before he actually got hired where I was starting to warm up to the idea of Paul Maurice being the guy. He went through this team after they moved from Atlanta to Winnipeg. Of course, being there for a few years, got a few points to win the President's Trophy in with the Winnipeg Jets, and just that core started to plateau. And of course, when there's a coach there for so many years, you're making the playoffs, and and then you have a few years where you're making it. The voice gets a little old after a while, and he resigned himself, saying that the Winnipeg Jets crew needed a little bit of a new voice there. And he's also had two different stints with the Carolina Hurricanes / Hartford Whalers. For those on the Locked On Heat feed who don't really follow how teams move, the Hartford Whalers did move to Carolina. Paul Maurice did move with them to Carolina. Made a Stanley Cup final with them. Lost in the Stanley Cup final against one of the best Detroit Red Wings teams of all time, and got rehired later. And, you know, a lot of people like to criticize Paul Maurice, saying that he has the most regulation losses in NHL history. But how do you get to those most regulation losses in NHL history? You coach so many years. So there's a trust factor there for that. Many GMs have said that they like that this guy is a player's coach. And to make another comparison, a basketball comparison, Kobe Bryant has the most missed shots in NBA history. Why does he have the most missed shots? Because he gets the ball a lot.
Yeah, it's one of those dumb stats that people just quote, and when they don't really know what they're talking about, he's got the most losses. It's like, yeah, what do you think? Did he go out and lose how many games were in an NHL season? I don't even know. Did he just lose every game every season for 10 straight years? Yeah, I don't think so. He probably would have lost his job halfway through his first year and never gotten hired again. So, but I get it. You know, he's sort of a retread kind of guy, and that's not – just the world of sports, not just hockey. That's not usually met with a ton of excitement. But look, I'm fine with it. You know, they were with an interim coach all last year. He did an all right job. They won the most games in the entire league, and they did end up flaming out in the playoffs. I think it was disappointing. But I wonder, how do you think the identity changes? How do you think that disappointment, losing early in the playoffs the way that they did to Tampa, how do you think that influenced the decision-making this offseason, influenced that willingness to say, hey, we had the best record in the league last year, and we're going to trade away maybe our best player, we're going to hire a new coach, and all these things?
It just says that the front office was upset, and that they traded two first-round picks at the trade deadline to try to go for it. And, of course, getting swept by your cross-state rival is never it's always hard to swallow, especially now that it's been 2 years in a row. And a battle of Florida has never happened in the postseason until the two most recent seasons. So seeing that they've made it to three Stanley Cup finals in a row, winning two of them, you know, it's a little tough. You're trying to get over the top and trying to. Right now, the Florida Panthers are little brother, and I do live in Orlando, so I am surrounded by Magic fans, and they're kind of little brother to the Heat. So there's kind of a relation there as far as little brother, big brother. But as far as the Panthers, they're trying to get over that hump of big brother Tampa Bay Lightning right now. And it comes down to really that the core had a plateau once again, and that they have to find a way to create that flexibility over the long term. And of course, their style most of last season was a lot of gun style, a lot of scores off the rush, which is exciting. And a lot of time their wins came from coming back from three goals. And right. You know, that's not a recipe for success over a long period of time. Of course, it happened in one of their games in the post against the Washington Capitals in game five. I was there in person for that one, and the building was just electric. But It's not a sustainable product put on the ice. So what we're hoping to see in Paul Maurice is more of a puck possession type of team. And of course, the power play in the postseason went 1-for-31 after being in the top five in the NHL in the regular season of 82 games. And 1-for-31, that's really what it came down to. The power play was just not good enough. And in the 2021 season, the goaltending was the issue for the Panthers. But in this most recent playoffs for the Panthers, the goaltending was the least of the Panthers. It was really the power play.
Armando Velez, Locked On Panthers. Last question for me. For those of you not watching on YouTube, what you have in the background here is a Florida Panthers type of wall decor, a Dwayne Wade jersey and a Tua Tagovailoa jersey behind you. So here's a game we're going to play it, and I'm just thinking about this now. But I'm going to give you a $300 bet, a $200 bet, and a $100 bet. So you've got those three separate bets that you get to play on, place on each of those franchises as you see fit, based on their upside. All right. So this is like kind of maybe less of a bet and more of like investing in the stock market. All right. So you've got $300 stock, a $200 stock, and a $100 stock. Where are you putting your money?
I have to beat number one. Because this is a sustainable product for such a long time. I mean, I've been following the Heat since the year before Dwayne Wade got drafted. So Eddie, Brian Grant, all that era of Miami Heat basketball. Unfortunately, I didn't get to watch Tim Hardaway. I didn't get to watch that era. But Dolphins, Ricky Williams years, I mean, all I know is suffering for this team. I mean, I'm a Tua stan, but, you know, I hope – I just hope that this coaching staff believes in him, but it's just Dolphins football has just been misery. Florida Panthers, yes, there's been misery there as well. But these most recent years, especially from 2021 and 2022, after they kind of in 2020, only three players from that 2020 season are still with the team. But a front office change and, of course, giving up draft capital has help this Florida Panthers extend and gives me more confidence. And so I'm going to put Heat number one, Panthers two, three. But there's lip of the coin for the Dolphins because they still got a great defense and it's just an improved wide receiver core. It's just we got to see it to believe it for the Dolphins.
Armando Velez, the host of Locked On Florida Panthers. You could find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Wes.
That'll do it for this week's episode of Good Times. Next week, I'll be joined by Locked On Hurricanes host Alex Dono. You're not going to want to miss that. Thank you for subscribing, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on YouTube. I will be back with David Ramil for new episodes of Locked On Heat starting on Monday. Have a great weekend.